Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BT, and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside episode 162, The Process of Change. We're going to do some changing in here today, David.
We are.
Yes, we are. And this was a fantastic episode because it is a definite process. There's like a roadmap that a person can use when they're going through these changes. So you talked about early on, you decide on something you want, take the step toward that something. You set a goal, then you have some sort of an experience around that goal, and then you learn and grow into that process. It's not like you just jump from the decision and boom, you've got it figured out. There's a growth period there. So is this the formula a person should use when they're, say, frustrated with their current situation and they know they need to do something? They start with the decision and take it from there?
It is. And the reason why I wanted to talk about it was because it's fascinating when if you were to say to the average person, you can become anything that you want, right? So let's say they're stuck in their job, they hate it, that type of thing. You can become anything that you want. I was literally thinking about this in the car on the way over this morning, and I was thinking, you know, that making that jump is actually so simple. The problem is that there's so many beliefs that person is carrying about why that they can't do that. That's the only reason that they don't, right? So can I really do it? Am I good enough? Will it happen for me? Where would I get the money? What about all these, what these people think of me? There's all these crazy, crazy beliefs that people have. And actually, it's you set a goal and you just adapt your way to the damn goal. It is really simple. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, and we get in our own way so many times. And it's not only on the front end, but on the back end as well. Like, let's say a person takes 2 years to make the decision. And then when they do finally make the decision and start to move toward it, they might say, man, if I only would have done this 2 years ago. So even then they're getting in their own way.
It is.
But it is very important for you to, set the goal and have something measurable to work for, right?
Yep.
And you actually recommended in the episode to write down that goal.
Write the
goal
as down.
Part of the process. What's the significance, just for our listeners, about actually writing it down, aside from being able to look at it all the time?
Well, you think about how many times a person sets a goal for themselves and then a week later they don't even remember that they set the goal, right? So it's actually a process. It's like a map, right? So like Proctor used to say, goals are like a roadmap for your life. They give you life direction. So if I write this goal down, like, okay, now this is the direction that I'm going in. Here was my conscious or unconscious goal before. It was to go to work every day, pay my bills, go home to my wife, raise the kids, whatever. I'm setting a new goal. So I write down what that goal is. Now everything in my life begins to adapt to the change of that goal. I'm no longer doing some of these things over here. I'm doing this. Instead of going to a movie on Friday night, I'm going to stay home and study so I can learn this skill set that'll help me accomplish this goal. It's that type of thing. But writing it down keeps it in front of you, and it starts to burn the image of what that looks like into your mind.
What is your take on editing a goal? Like, I'm in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I wrote down a goal. I'm the kind of person that doesn't stop until I finish that particular goal. And if I don't reach that goal, then I can always change course and do a new goal. But have I failed because I didn't reach this goal, or am I able to edit a goal so that it brings me closer to what I want?
That's tricky. This right here is where we start to get stuck in the mud.
Right.
Because I would never say don't change a goal. You may learn something as you start to go down this road and you're like, oh, I can't do that, or I don't want to do that. And maybe I can't do it because,
maybe there's like a resource that wasn't available at the time, or you can't put your hands on something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, most of the circumstances about why we can't do something aren't true. But there are some that show up that are true.
Sure.
Right? So having said that, the idea is that if you're going to edit the goal, it's usually around time. Right? The goal stays the same.
Got it.
But we pick the wrong time frame in which to create it. So we have to adjust the time frame. But we keep the goal the same. unless something shows up for that goal that completely requires a workaround, or you start to go towards it and you're like, oh, I don't like this. Right. Like, I thought I would like this. Right. I don't like that. I mean, one of my kids just went through that. They wanted this career, and they started to they threw themselves completely into it, and then they realized, I don't like it.
There you go.
I don't like it. So I'm going to go choose to do something else. But unless they thrown themselves all the way in it, they wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Right? So sometimes we just find out that we don't like it.
Totally. And you also recommended in the episode that, you know, when we are putting down a goal, you recommend not discouraging long-term thinking, but make it so that that goal can be accomplished within the year that you're working in. Yeah. Is there a reason behind that, just to be able to prove to yourself something?
Yeah, because you need to restart to rewire yourself with accomplishments, right?
Sure.
And conscious accomplishments. Even if you were a kid, like you were a straight-A student, you got a trophy for every sports team, you were in, you know, every club in high school, like even if you did all of that, how much of it was conscious versus your parents saying, you got to be in this, you got to do that, you got to do all these things. This is about consciously saying, here's where I am. Here's the goal I want to accomplish. I'm consciously setting that goal and I'm going to consciously work toward it and accomplish it in a short period of time. You can have the big audacious 20-year goal or whatever it is at the same time, but you need to do stuff on a regular basis that is consistently giving your life direction. I mean, it tells you what to work on every day. It allows you to self-reflect and look at yourself and go, okay, I need to work on this. Oh, here's something that came up that I need to work on about myself. Maybe your goal requires that you do sales. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't like to do sales. I'm afraid to pick up the phone. I'm afraid to have a conversation face-to-face with somebody. I really want that goal. I got to learn how to do that. Okay. So now I'm going to seek out help to find out, how do I actually do this? Right?
Sure.
That's the whole idea. And then you're building upon yourself throughout that whole year.
Yeah.
You're building. And probably like when you started running, right? Yeah. You didn't start off running 20 miles.
I incrementally built into it as I kept getting better fitness, better mind training. It was a definite process. And it continues to this day too. So it's not like I got to the end. I'm like, okay, well, I figured that out. I'm still learning as I go. And I've been doing it I've been running consistently for 5-6 years now. So
right.
Yeah, no, totally. I get it. It makes complete and total sense. And I love that, you know, we all feel good when we accomplish a goal, even if it's a little goal that you know you're going to hit. Why not set that goal and be like, oh, I did that last week. This is great. It feels good inside. And then you're able to take that and apply it to the next time you do it and the next time you do it.
And I think if we sit down and really give some serious thought to the idea of what are the values that I have inside of me that really are going to determine not only what happens in my life, but the way that I experience it, like the quality of it, right? You could be a person who does not like change. Now, you'll change if you have to. You'll change if the government dictates it, your boss dictates it, your family dictates it, but you don't like it. You resist change, you know, like crazy. It's really going to limit the things that you can do in your life. What if you don't like change, but you also love having all these other kinds of experiences in your life? Then you have to look at, that value is not serving me,
sure.
Right? So I need to adopt a value that will allow me to create the life that I want. So if I become totally okay, non-resistant with change, if I become comfortable being uncomfortable, right? If I put myself and I develop that value system, it's going to allow me to then do anything that would previously be difficult or that I would be resisting. Like, there's so many things when it comes to other individuals in success. If you think about it, you got to learn to sell. You have to learn to negotiate. You have to learn to talk to creditors. You may have to talk to bankers. You may have to run a team. You may have to hire, fire, like discipline people, like all different kinds of things come up where the development of yourself makes that either easy or it becomes very difficult and you don't do it. Then the team falls apart and your company's gone. So it's extremely important.
It's fascinating as we're having this conversation, because I have just what you were just saying, I've had an evolution of sorts, because I typically would have characterized myself, years ago as someone who resisted change. Like, change was not good. If I had my way, I probably would have stayed in California as a teacher my whole life because I was loyal to a fault, right? Steph helped me to see that this isn't the best place to raise your kids. Let's move to Wisconsin. This teaching career is no longer serving you. I'm going to leave. Maybe you should consider it too. It wasn't my idea to leave, but I've learned to embrace change more. So I still dig in on certain things. You know this. Most of our team knows this. I still dig in at times, but there are also times where now, had I not made this change, I would not have experienced the things I've experienced in the last 10 years. Right. I would have been doing the same thing day to day, hating my life. So by kicking and screaming a little bit at the beginning to where I am now, I've gone through each one of those. I no longer resist change as much. I'd say I'm like change light is a lot better, right. But I'm getting better each day. And I think to the people who are listening to this episode, they're probably thinking the same thing. Like, I hope it gives them pause to think, why do I resist change so much? And why is change so uncomfortable for me? Because there's a reason for that, right? Yeah. You go back and look and see, like, my mom did the same pretty much career most of her life. She's lived in the same town, in the same home, in the same street. I've moved 8, 9, 10 times in the last 10 years, yeah. Right? It's really amazing when you stop to take a look back. And for those of you who have experienced a huge change, you probably look back and say to yourself, wow, I actually did that. And look what I got to do because of it. This is not a knock on people who do the same thing for their entire life. But I think what it boils down to for me is that had I not made those changes, my life wouldn't have been as happy as it is right now, because I would have been one of those resentful people.
Totally.
I feel like. Yeah. Totally. I love that.
But that growth also has affected every other area of your life in a great way.
Totally.
I mean, I know that it was uncomfortable,
yes.
But the way that you're living your life today is so different than it was when you were in Janesville or when you were in California.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
And definitely different than when you were in Montana.
Yeah, and not only that, but it also has affected my children's lives in ways that we're not even going to be able to know as they go out into their college careers, their business careers, what they're going to be. They've got a mindset that was curated by being around you and his work and your work and us talking about all these things at our kitchen table.
Right.
Like the experiences that they have at such a young age, I don't envy it so much, but I say to myself, like, wow, you guys really have been seated at the table for change. And you've got to see me grow. You've got to see your mom grow. You've got to see all these people around us who are doing amazing things, and they get to experience that piece of life. It's so cool.
They're much more empowered than we were.
Oh, my God. It's so amazing.
For sure.
Yeah, it is. Well, you asked in the episode, who do I have to be to accomplish the goal?
Yeah.
So when you were first making significant change in your life and you were asked this sort of question, do you remember how you answered it or how you would have answered it back then when you were first starting out? Who do I have to be to accomplish the goal?
Probably wouldn't have even understood the question.
Right. Because there is a way of being. Like, you can't just...
Yes.
Like, that's an important question. Who do I have to be? Like, I want to be a millionaire. Okay, that's great. You threw it out there. Who do you have to be a millionaire? Dress the part, have the car, have conversations like you're speaking. You know what I mean? Like, there's things that there's often a disconnect with people's goals and who they have to be to do that. I couldn't be here when I was first starting out. I had to grow into being here.
Well, this is where I studied for 7 years on, getting the education, but also changing who I was being. And when it wasn't until I got a mentor that I really started making significant improvement. I was making a good improvement, right? But a good improvement inside my own comfort zone. So I started off at this company driving a truck, and then I moved into management, and then I moved into upper man, you know, like that whole thing. That all that was great. But I worked with Bob for a couple of years, and I was a millionaire. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, that's very different. And I'm running my own company. So he worked on who I was being in areas that I didn't know needed changing.
Sure.
Beliefs that I didn't even know that I had that were holding me back. Right.
Yeah.
Ways of approaching life, ways of approaching decisions, ways of vision. You know, I said you pick a goal that's realistic to you in the episode that we did. The idea is that it needs to be something that you can see in your internal reality to bring it to your external reality. changing who you're being allows you to see further in your internal reality, because now I'm understanding much more about myself and the universe than I did before. I don't think that there's a goal that I could set right now that I would not believe that we could accomplish, because I understand the laws and I understand how to work there. Could I tell you how we're going to do it? That I couldn't tell you.
No.
But I would totally believe that we can get there, as long as it works with the law of cause and effect. So, but there was a time where it wouldn't have been that way.
Sure.
Because I didn't understand all the different things that I was being that would not allow me to get there. I mean, I would have never thought that being in a bad relationship would have had that much effect on it, because you hear about people that are miserable in relationships all the time, and they're successful. They're CEOs. They own a company. It doesn't seem to be holding them back. Yeah, they might be miserable. They might not be getting laid. I mean, we hear all those different stories all the time. But it's also damping down a huge portion of who they are to tolerate that. So then there's the whole how you do anything is how you do everything. If I am stuck in this relationship, what other relationships am I stuck in?
Sure.
How is that spilling over into other areas of my life? I'm trying to think of something else. The way that I viewed money. I mean, I wanted to be wealthy. I was trying to earn more money. That was my first way of actually handling that goal. But it would have never dawned on me that I actually needed to spend more when I didn't have it in order to be able to get there, because I had to retrain my brain how to think about money and understand the universal principles around money. I would have never got there, because that was so counterintuitive to anything that I had been taught. It never would have even occurred to me, oh, spend more.
Yeah. Spend your way to success.
Spend your way to success.
Yeah.
Never would have entered my mind.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I love that. All right. Before we get into talking about people, I have one more question around the importance of the goal accomplishing process and accepting responsibility. This is huge. You said people get lost here because they move into blame or self-pity and they don't accept responsibility for where they currently are. So if a person out there is listening and they're struggling a little bit, what can they do to avoid that I'm not going to accept responsibility trap? Is it gratitude again? Does it come back to that? Like, or is it just saying, you know what, this is who I am, this is who I'm being, and I made this, I created this. It's no one else, it's on me.
It is. It's all of what you just said. And it's also something else. It's understanding that you may actually be in relationship with other people based on how you project responsibility onto them. So if we don't know how to have a healthy relationship, it doesn't mean we won't have a relationship. It means that we'll have an unhealthy relationship. And the only way that we know to do relationship that way is with unhealthy practices, right? Blaming other people is a way of being in relationship with them. It's just not a healthy way of being in relationship. So if you stop blaming other people, you may also change that relationship or not even be in that relationship with them anymore. And it may have nothing to do with responsibility, but how insecure you actually feel being outside of a relationship. That's the things where like a coach comes into play, because most people would never think about that.
Right.
They keep wanting to accept responsibility, but they keep failing at it because they don't know that the underlying driver is that's a way for me to attach to somebody else.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing, you know, like in relationships, it's the same thing with like dysfunctional things like anger or whatever. Sometimes people fight because they don't know how to be intimate any other way. So that's how they, that's how they're in relationship with that person, fighting and bitching and moaning and, you know, complaining about the person. And they love the person dearly. They just don't know how to express anything different. If you were to just say, stop being angry, stop fighting with this person, they would feel like they lost the person. So there's something underlying the responsibility besides that. And I think that we don't have time to do this today, but there's various different things that are under responsibility that I think that we would have to take a look at in order to find out what is it, how did you attach to this word in this behavior, whether it's projection of it or acceptance of it, in order that you move to acceptance of it so that it's completely full in your life.
Yeah, it's most likely if there is something that speaks to that, you're not aware of it. It's running in the
background.
You're
totally not aware.
You're just completely unaware. That's
because all of these things, they intertwine, right?
Like
they're all connected. It's not like these things are separate.
Right.
One feeds the other, which feeds the other, which feeds the other. So that is the whole idea of like dysfunctional parenting or being raised in a dysfunctional environment. Not much of what's happening is actually functional beyond that little unit that you're experiencing in life. And then it's like you take that little pod out and you go everywhere else, but you recreate that family dynamic at work, at church,
yes,
at social events, at golfing with your buddies. Like it's the same thing everywhere you go.
Yeah, it sure is. And this is kind of a good segue into what I wanted to spend some time talking about in this Inside the Episode, is talking about the importance of having people in our lives that support or accept who we are when we're going through these changes. And you and I have both gone through considerable changes over the course of our lives. And I'm sure most of the people listening in here have also gone through significant changes in their lives as well. And when you're making a shift, it seems like it makes people uncomfortable, like people who are close to you, 100%. So what does a person need to be aware of when they are at this point and starting to make significant changes in their lives and they have to start removing people from their circle? And sometimes that's even their family. What does a person need to be aware of when they go into that?
They need to be aware of all the different emotions that they could experience in doing that. So you have the things that you need to be aware of for yourself and the things that you need to be aware of for other people. People can experience shame, guilt, resentment. I mean, resenting having to do it, that type of thing. Jealousy, loneliness, self-pity. I mean, I could just go on and on with this,
It's a long list.
Yeah. So you have to be aware that by removing or separating yourself from that relationship, you may start to experience these things. But see, that tells you the next thing that you need to work on then, right? What do I do with the shame? What do I do with the guilt? What do I do with the sadness? What do I do with the grief? What do I do with the loneliness? What do I do with the resentment?
The judgment.
The judgment, the anger, like all of this stuff. Then you also have other people who are now going to project onto you. So let's say you remove Uncle Pete from your life because Uncle Pete is toxic, right? It's not just dealing with Uncle Pete anymore. Now maybe your mom, your dad, your cousin, Aunt Edna, Uncle Pete's wife, yeah, like all these people are going like, who the fuck are you to get rid of Uncle Pete? Like,
sure,
you know, you're breaking up the family. You're a shit disturber. You're a growing concern, like all these different things. And they start to project that on you. So then you have to learn how to set boundaries with people.
100%.
Right? Because all of them are interconnected. And we see this in families all the time. They have to draw a line with one person, and then other people start attacking them because they set a boundary. Because none of them have boundaries, and it's okay for Uncle Pete to be a douchebag to everybody. Everybody's just accepted it.
Yeah.
But you're the one that's going to step up and say, no more, I'm done with it.
And you've got a great like line that you use when you're setting a boundary with family or people who are you are close with. And that line is something to the effect of, I'm not open to having this conversation now or ever.
Ever.
It's like a firm, because this happens a lot of times with families, because they feel like they need to protect you or they know better than you and you're going to leave this position and go take this position. That's crazy talk. How can you do that? You need to set that firm boundary, and you do it by saying, look, I'm this is what I'm doing and I'm not having this conversation with you now or ever.
Right.
Boundary set.
Yeah. The way that I say it is, I am not now, nor will I ever be open to having this conversation.
Yes. And it's as easy as, and that is a complete
sentence.
And
I'll get up and walk away.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So let's talk about the judgment, because I mentioned judgment in there about letting people go who don't support who you are becoming. Can you remember back when you were making your changes, the judgment you were receiving? I mean, you famously tell the story about your uncle, you know, are you a millionaire yet? I'm assuming that's a huge one for you. Mm-hmm. Are there any other instances where you felt judged, and how did you keep it out of your own head? Because I know for me, that's where I struggle, is with the judgment around it. I actually judge myself more than maybe the people who are judging me. I'm projecting that out to them.
I know that there's people in my family that judge me. They just don't do it openly. And I don't know if they think I know or I don't know, but I know.
Sure.
I think one of the ones that was the most difficult was my mother. So she's deceased now. But when she was alive, we had a very interesting relationship. She was a very difficult person to get along with. She was a very angry person. She had a very lonely life because she didn't like and trust other people. She judged people very, very harshly. And there were things that happened when I was a kid that took us a while to repair once I became an adult. So for a long time, I thought those things were pretty much repaired. And I fell under the disillusionment that, because I had set boundaries where she couldn't manipulate me anymore. She found another way to manipulate me that I was not aware that she was doing. And then when I started to become aware that she was trying to manipulate me, I set another boundary with her. So it wasn't until after she passed away, it just so happened that it was the day after she passed away, that somebody told me that she had judged me extremely harshly. Basically what she said was that I wasn't her son anymore and that the business changed me. And I told the person, I'm like, the business didn't change me. I changed for the business. And the business is number one in my life. It's my business. It's my vision. It's my passion. It's my purpose in life. Everything else is second. Yeah. Everything else is second. And it doesn't mean that the other things in my life that are second aren't important to me. They're very, some of those things that are second, I would die for, right? But my purpose, the reason that God put me here, is to be a benefit in the skill set that I have. That's number one for me in my life. And everybody else is very important to me, but they're number two.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. Yeah. I was just thinking about, you know, a situation I had, you know, years ago where I went to like a high school class reunion or something like that. And it really threw me for a loop because I felt constantly judged and I found myself, I don't want to say dumbing myself down, but not talking about all the amazing things I'd been doing for the time when we met you and started changing our mindset, because I didn't want people to feel as if, oh, you're just Hollywood, you're big time, you're so much better than us. Right. And these people didn't even say that. That was a total, it mind fucked me so much that I was projecting all this on there. So I've got insecurities about where I've come and where I'm going. I'm getting better at it, which is great, but it made me think about the power of judgment and more often than not self-judgment when it comes to this circle we keep around us. And I know that my family thought we were crazy to give up teaching jobs that had benefits and 3 months off in the summer. I know that the people around me were like, these guys are crazy. They'll go back. Or what are they going to do? They're going to be home. Like all the crazy talk. And it still goes on to this day. They still don't know what we
and
do.
It'll never stop.
It'll never stop. And what's interesting is I know they no longer have those conversations with us, which is what you just talked about. They do it behind your back, which is fine. I know they're doing it.
And then
you
hear great. About it.
And then you hear about it through other sources. And you're like, oh, isn't that funny? I'm able to deal with it a lot more, you know, a lot better now. But back then, if you listen to those naysayers, you're just going to stay right where you're at and you're not going to grow, because the chances are if you do make those decisions to grow, you're going to outgrow those people. Yep. And I have outgrown people and I've had to remove people from my life. I've shifted it to be more of I outgrew them, not because I'm better than them, because that was what I was playing with. It's because I made a decision to put this first and to go towards this thing. It doesn't mean I didn't love you. You were in my life for a reason, you know, a season, whatever it might be, you were there, but now this is my new path.
Yeah.
And I think that's extremely powerful. I just wanted to get your take on judgment there.
Yeah, it really is. The, you know, the idea about, like, say, me putting this first in my life, people don't realize, had I not put this first in my life, we would have never dug ourselves, like my kids would have never had the experiences that they had from a financial perspective. Yeah. It would have never happened. We would be in a very, very working class community. The kids probably would be mediocre at best. And, you know, it could go down a bad road from there, because the people that were in that area, they've never dug themselves out, and they have drug problems, alcohol problems, abuse problems. Like, you know, they're working, they're fired, they're laid off, they're injured. You know, like it never gets out
repeating
of that.
Repeating the cycle.
But they have family.
Right.
They have family.
Yes.
Yeah, so they can all stay miserable together.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's totally, it made me think about like the, you know, the plot line from It's a Wonderful Life, you know, as we're going into the holiday season, thinking about, you know, George and how he was so like his alternate, he got to see his alternate universe had he not made this decision. I don't want to play with that too much in my brain because I could go back, but I do have fork in the road moments where we made a decision and had we not made that decision, it would have been very different than where we are now. Like every single thing, good, bad, or indifferent, has led us to this point. And it's just really interesting when you start to think about, you know, like the people that don't make that leap because they're listening to the noise that's outside of them instead of following their true heart, their true desire.
Here's something else, Brandon. You'll hear people say this. Is that business going to be there for you at the end or when something goes wrong like family is? Listen, family's the one that won't be there for you.
Right.
They're going to die.
Yes.
Right? Your parents are probably going to die before you
sure.
do if you go in the natural order of
sure,
things.
Sure.
Kids are going to grow up and move away. We're going to die. But who we become is ours forever. Right? Our soul takes that forever. Whatever we become, that's ours. That's ours forever.
Yes.
And I am not saying in any way, don't pay attention to your family. Don't make that important. I'm not saying not that at all. It's very important. It's very important. And it needs a tremendous amount of attention and love and care and development and all of that. But if you don't put yourself first in your own life, nobody else will. And you will give and give and give and give, and they will take and take and take and take until there's nothing left.
Yeah. God. We could go on for days on this conversation. So let's wind it down with this. So I want to close with one of your favorite quotes. Actually, it's a company quote now since you've shared it with us, and it's absolutely beautiful. It actually lives on our wall in our boardroom here at Team Nagel HQ. Yeah. And it's the quote by Leland Val Vandewal, and it's, "The degree to which a person can grow is directly proportional to the amount of truth he can accept about himself without running away." Can you just briefly explain what that quote means and why it's so important to live that way?
Because if you're going to grow, you have to be willing to really honestly, radically honestly look at yourself and go, I don't like this. I don't like this. Here's things about me that are not good, right? And then it's not a judgment. Well, you know what? Actually, it is a judgment because you're judging it, saying that it's not good and I need to change it. It's not personal. But you're looking at the sides of yourself that have been passed on from one generation to another that do not support healthy anything. Right? It's dysfunctional, it's toxic ways of thinking, emotional processing, behavior, interrelationship stuff, work at, like, you know, it's just toxic shit. And you have to be willing to look at it and say, you know what, this is not serving me, I need to change this. So here's where the running away comes part. When you start to look at something in yourself and you're horrified by it.
Sure.
And you can't deal with it. And then you're like, you start taking it personally on yourself, judging yourself as a bad person, or you start to engage the whole idea of shame and guilt around it. And then once shame and guilt get involved, you're stuck forever.
Yeah, you're done.
As long that pattern, you can't break it. You can't break it from within the pattern. You have to step out of it, which means I have to release shame and guilt from my life. It has no part. It doesn't play a role at all. This whole idea, and I've said, you know, there's toxic shame and then there's kind of a healthy shame. Not really. I mean, if you really want to get radically honest about it, there's nothing healthy about shame at all. Because the whole idea says that there's something wrong with you fundamentally. There, at your core, there's something wrong with you. If you come from that place, you can't change that. You need to come from, here's what is serving me and others, or here's what's not serving me and others. And then you change it from a desire, from an ethical perspective, but not from shame and guilt. But that's, you know, you get shame and guilt and people run away from that truth every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's past.
Right. It's amazing to me that the power that shame and guilt holds over so many of us. And if you were just able to identify from looking on the outside in what that shame and guilt is, your change would be limitless. There's nothing you couldn't do.
When I look back at my life, there are things that when I realized what I had done, I was horrified, right? But since then, the place that I've actually come from is, oh, that's interesting. Look at what I did here. Look at how this hurt people. Look at how this was not functional. Look how this affected somebody else's life. I'm so grateful that I became aware that I was doing that and have the ability to change it. Because here's the thing, we're all on this journey of self-awareness and self-discovery. If we get stuck in the shame and the guilt of what we've done in the past, we can't move on to something in the future. If you keep replaying shame and guilt, it moves you back into dysfunctional behavior. You can't ever, if you hurt somebody in the past, you can't unhurt them.
So it's done. It's over.
If you stole something in the past, you can't unsteal it. If you killed somebody in the past, you can't unkill them, right? If you fuck somebody over in the past, you can't unfuck them over. You can't undo anything that you did in the past. All you can do is look at it, forgive yourself, forgive other people, and move forward.
Right. That's it. All right. Well, this has been amazing. Thanks for coming inside, David.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.